Now it's time to turn our attentions to Gaelic football. A pulsating weekend of action just gone as Abbeyside, Ballinacorty and the Nair joined group winners Rathcormac and Galtier in the semi-finals. First half goals from Michael Kiley and Sean Whelan-Barrett saw Abbeyside, Ballinacorty breeze past Clashmore, Kinsale Beg by 2.15 to 8 points. Tomás McCarthy caught up with Corty selector Mark Ferncombe afterwards.
Here with Abbeyside, Ballinacorty selector Mark Ferncombe. Mark, what pleased you most about that performance today?
I don't know really, Tomás. It's so fresh after. I suppose it was pretty broken, but look, it's a job done. It's probably a step in the right direction from the last 2 years we've lost the quarterfinals. So from that point of view, it's a good step for us.
Was it a good sign, the goals that you scored today, Mark, punishing those two Clashmore, Kinsale Beg turnovers?
Yeah, because like, football is like basketball at times, and teams get turned over and each other's 21, and Michael turned it over and then he ended up punching. I think he got that one, and then the other one was a kick out to us. I can't really remember, but it's really, the most important thing, if you get goal chances in football, we probably had a few more there and they did too, you have to take them, do you know, because the pitch is in great condition, the weather's good at the minute, and it's played for good football, but next weekend it could be totally different and scores be at a premium, so we'll need goals if we're going to progress next week.
Patrick Horney got 9 points today. What do you make of the contribution Pudge has made to the club over the years?
Yeah, unreal. Great footballer, loves playing with Ballinacorty. You know, he's hungry to achieve more all the time, and you know, he'd drive you mad at times, but like, the one thing about Pudge, he can score. There's not many scoring forwards left in the county, and he's definitely still one of them, and especially last year he kind of had a few injuries, and probably it would have been easier for him now to kind of slip off and not bother go again. But he put in good work this year, and look, can he do that again next week? Will be the question.
Has Willie Beresford just picked up from where he's left off with Harlan?
Yeah. Well, today he did. But he's great. Like, he's outstanding. His attitude towards the whole thing is A1. He wants to improve. Like, he'd be actually looking for footballs during the week, as he would be when hurling. He's just looking to improve all the time. He's still learning, he's still improving. I think he's in with the hurlers now this year, so he'll benefit massively. He's just a good, tough, hardy. He can do what he's skillful. He's everything, really. Do you know, he's a good lad, but yeah, he's one of a number of good lads we have.
Was it hard to lift the players after the county final loss to Ballygunner?
It wasn't really, because you know, we're used to it. Like, you don't have time to kind of feel sorry for ourselves. We got back on the Wednesday and went at it, and we kind of knew the Kilrassany game first time around was going to be more mentally challenging for both teams who lost, you know, county finals the previous weekend. It was just more getting the heads right, and it's manager led and player driven, and if the players want to go about it, they kind of led that kind of side of it, and it hasn't been pretty at times because you've what, 4 or 5 weeks of football, but we're just trying to improve and be competitive in every game.
Just finally, Mark, how glad are you to see Benji Whelan back on the sideline after his health scare?
Yeah, great. Benji's a great lad. Do you know, I've enjoyed working with him this year, and the lads probably are delighted to have him back. So it's great, and you can just see the last few weeks he's come to life for the football. He's really passionate, and even, you know, you have to reel him in there Friday night, how much he's just mad to go. So he gets another week anyway, so it's positive.
The Nair saw off Kilrossenty by 2.11 to 1.11 in what was one of the games of the championship so far. And after the game, Tomás caught up with Nair boss Derek Lyons.
Overall, delighted to get the win. As I said to the boys, they just love keeping us on our toes right up until the 11th hour. You know, we can't get through a game and just sit back and relax anything. And you wouldn't expect it against a team like Kilrossenty. To be fair, they're a proud footballing team. And I was speaking to their managers after the game, they're like, definitely their best performance this year, to be fair to them. Like, you know, so we have to face that challenge every game. You know, every team wants to beat the Nair. And look, we're just driving on now. We're glad to be back in the semi-final.
In the Ladies Football Championship, once again, Ballymacarbery are through to the final as the bid for a monumental 43rd county title on the spin is still alive and well. That's after a 3-10 to 2-1 win over Galtier on Saturday morning. Claire Walsh, Aileen Wall and Ruby Brown all found the net for the defending champions. They'll take on their old rivals Cumber Rangers, who won out against Aaron's Own. A second half goal from substitute Eva Shankey helped them to a 1-14 to 2-3 success. And Tomás has been speaking to Ballymac forward Aileen Wall.
Here with Ballymacarry forward Aileen Wall after their semi-final win over Galtier here in Colligan this afternoon. Aileen, considering the talent that Galtier have on their team, how pleased are you with that result?
Yeah, look, we knew what we were facing here today, having played them in the Championship already, but we knew that they have some excellent forwards, they have a really good defence, so we knew that we had to bring our best today. Now the conditions, the wind was a factor in it as well today, but look, we're really happy with coming out of that and moving on to next week now.
What parts of your game are you most satisfied with today?
Yeah, look, our defence was good today. I suppose when you have kind of wet and windy conditions, it can be challenging for backs. You don't know whether to lunge for that ball or not, you know. So I thought our defence did really well today, and only conceding 2-1 was an excellent result for them.
Tell us about your own goal, Aileen. You fairly picked out that top corner there.
Yeah, look, the ball came out and the pitch was wide open in front of me. So thankfully a few good passes up along the pitch made space for me. And yeah, top corner, I don't know, what I was hoping it would go somewhere near the goal. But yeah, thankfully it went in anyway.
What are your thoughts on playing a county semi-final at 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning?
Yeah, look, I suppose yesterday evening we were prepared for a 4 o'clock game, and the message came in and you have to kind of organise yourself quickly, but it's not ideal. But, you know, we have to go with the situation that's put in front of us, and it was unfortunate that the 2 weekends had orange weather warnings. But look, we just want to play football and be out there playing and progressing along. And, you know, it's important that we wouldn't be left playing a semi-final during the week with the county final so close. So it's good to get it played, and thankfully we came out the right side of it as well. So
Michelle McGrath is back for another year at number 3. Aileen, I think she's given over 25 years of service now to Ballymac. What does she bring to this team?
Oh my God, she's the life of this team, really. She's such a leader. Even when she's shouting, she's always shouting and telling us what to do. And you know, people listen because you know they know that Hopper knows her stuff. And no, she's the life of this team. And things revolve around her. And we try to organise our defence around her because she's so solid back there. And she organises us all really well as well.
How tough is it not to have your sister Mairead involved on the pitch? Aileen, she picked up a cruciate ligament injury there a couple of months ago.
Yeah, look, it was very unfortunate for Mairead, and she was really excited to be back playing after missing out last year. But look, it would be lovely to have her, and but she's there on the sideline shouting us on, encouraging us, and you know, her expertise on the sideline as well is needed and is valued as well. So she has her place there as well with us, and it's great to have her with us as well.
They're going for 43 in a row now, Aileen. Are you still as hungry as ever for silverware?
Yeah, a lot of people throw around that number, but I don't think that has been mentioned in our dressing room in many years. It's the county final that's ahead of us. We want to win whatever we can, you know, the same as any other team, no matter what. It's lovely to look back at that maybe at Christmas time, maybe, or something when you're kind of thinking back on the year, but it's never mentioned in our dressing room, and hasn't been yet this year, so we'll keep going again, and it's just the next one for us.
Yeah, and you were in an All-Ireland final last December up in Croke Park. When did you actually get back to the training field after that, Aileen?
Yeah, so thankfully we were able to hold out till March, so we got a little bit of a break anyway. So I think it's good to get away from it as well and recharge the batteries, and you kind of are looking forward to it again because, you know, it's some of the county girls and stuff, they're training the whole way through, and it can be difficult to motivate yourself. So it was good to get a break, and we got back into it and got training hard again then.
Stay with us, because after the break we'll be hearing from Aidan Corbett, who paid a visit to Ballyrandle this week to hear about all the success going on at the Dungarvan Rugby Club.
You're listening to The Last Leg on WLR with Jordan Norris. Now, Dungarvan Rugby Club have been making big strides in recent years. Ardmore's Thomas Ahern has been playing for Munster at senior level since 2020, and most recently, Tomás Crotty, a club player, has been selected for the Ireland under-18s. He'll travel to Treviso in Italy later this month for 2 test matches against Italy. Aidan Corbett went down to the Ballyrandle club to see what they are doing to see such progress and recognition in recent years. He spoke to Stephen McMahon, Director of Rugby, Killian Corkery, Senior Manager, Women's Officer Rachel O'Connell, Youths Officer Simon Stanley, and David Burke, Minnie's Officer.
Delighted to be here today at Dungarvan Rugby Club. We're here with a fair few of the committee members and management team here. We'll start off with the youth section, I suppose, because there's been a lot of development at that age, and we've seen a lot of players from men's and women's getting called up for Munster and even an Ireland call-up as well. What do you put it down to so many players from your club getting called up at that provincial level and international level?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, it's probably a 10-year overnight success. So I think it's, you know, it's the good work that's been done here over the previous committee and committees before that have brought in a lot of players, particularly at minis level, and then when we have those players at the minis level and we retain them, and then they naturally flow to the youth part of the club, that gives us more opportunity for numbers, to be more competitive, more coaching, and ultimately be more successful and give us an opportunity to get called up for Munster as well.
Simon, Waterford isn't exactly a rugby stronghold, especially in Munster. It's probably seen as the weakest of the six counties, unfortunately, at least to date. Do you think we're starting to see a change in that direction, and do you think we're going to see a bit more Daisha representation in Munster Red over the next few years?
Yeah, well, it's certainly the furthest from Thomond Park, for sure. And I suppose there's either stronger traditions of rugby in other parts of the province. But I think that is changing. And I think Munster have put a lot of effort into developing local clubs like ourselves, and that can only help. And I suppose as rugby, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. So as rugby is more successful and the Irish team and Munster team are more successful, you know, that helps. That makes players here in the Garvan want to come and play rugby. And, you know, as Killian said, that with the coaching support, we can retain them. And then ultimately, that's going to make the club stronger and ultimately rugby in Waterford stronger as well.
And why do you think it's taken so long to get rugby going, I suppose, in Waterford? Because it's always been one of our main sports as a country, but I suppose in Waterford it's taken a bit longer to get going here.
It's tradition really is the only answer. We don't have a big traditional school like County Tipperary, the Cork schools, the Limerick schools would have. We don't have that in Waterford, so really Waterford is traditionally a GAA and soccer county. That's what we have been. I mean, just in Dungarvan alone, we have, within 10 kilometres of Dungarvan, I suppose we've 10 or 12 GAA clubs. We've 4 soccer clubs in the town alone. So that has always been dominant in West Waterford, whereas we're really trying to push the rugby club now and push things forward. In the whole county, like Waterpark and Waterford City and Tramore are doing the same thing. And like Simon says, a rising tide, if we all help each other out a little bit, become more competitive with each other, things are getting better with club rugby underage, certainly in Waterford. At the moment, Waterford underage, under 18s and down, is probably the strongest club county in Munster right now. Waterpark won the under 18s cup last year. Waterford City have a really good under 18s team this year. We have a very good under 18s this year. I'd anticipate that the Waterford clubs will be very strong, certainly under 18 level, throughout Munster, and be really knocking the door, winning another cup and bringing it back to the county again.
Good stuff. Now's your time to sort of name drop a few of the names that have been getting called up and getting honours at the provincial and international level for Ireland and Munster. How proud are you to have these players getting called up from Dungarvan?
Yeah, we're extremely proud, and I'll maybe let Steve address that.
Yeah, it's great. There's a lot of success currently in the club. I think echoing what Simon said earlier, it definitely hasn't been a flash in the pan, and I think it's always easier for players coming through when they have somebody to look up to. You know, and we've been lucky enough in the club, going back years and years now. It started slowly with East Munster representation, then slowly with Munster Youths, Munster 19s, Munster 20s, a few Irish calls here and there. And, you know, it's more common now than not that we have players selected across all the age groups from Munster under 16s, 17s, 18s and so on. And now both in boys and girls, which is great to see, you know. And I think the success of the likes of Thomas Hearn, Aveen now, and Niamh Briggs before her, you know, it gives a lot of young players a realistic goal to aim for.
How many members are you currently catering towards here?
I actually noticed, just because I literally just looked at it, we have 360 odd members, and I think there's just over 200 playing members as the last accurate count anyway. But obviously we're just rolling out the new season, so I think the forecast looks like that's going up a couple of percentage points again, so it's growing in the right direction.
And from what age group are you starting at here?
Dave would probably be better to answer this.
Yeah, under sevens is the first age you can join at, so minis then is under sevens to under 12. Then the youths is up to under 18s, and then obviously the senior team. So when it comes to the minis, I suppose we're only a couple of weeks into the season. Not all new members will have registered yet, but you know, before we start games, they'll have to. But like on a Saturday morning, we're starting with 80 players plus, I suppose, across all those minis age groups. So we'd hope to expand that. So I suppose success for the minis is having more players at the end of the season than we had at the start.
What are your club doing where the catchment area, you have an advantage in that you're the only rugby club in a quite large area, in that the nearest club is probably Waterford or Clonmel.
So you've got that advantage, but then it's not a rugby stronghold area at the same time. So what are you doing to have so many players getting called up at provincial level?
Well, I suppose that kind of comes at youth stage. But for the minis, as I said, it's about growing numbers. And the only way to grow numbers is to make sure the players are enjoying it. And sorry, I should add, the girls also train. That's mixed. And then the girls themselves have training on a Monday night. So, you know, that those numbers are even bigger. What are we doing? I suppose I'd like to think they're enjoying themselves, really. You know, there's plenty of training. We've blitzes. We don't have to travel too far. We keep the parents happy, which is obviously important, especially with minis. If they're enjoying it, like, the plan is that come 12-13 when they move up to the youths, they can at least tackle properly, pass properly and ruck properly. So that's our job done, and over to the lads.
Touching back on that, so when they go from minis to the older age groups, when they're entering their teenage years, what is rugby doing as a culture to foster these relationships, keep them one in the sport, but also foster those lifelong relationships and life lessons?
Yeah, I think that's a very important aspect of rugby. And I think, like, as David said, we start teaching the skills at a young age, and then it's even the way the games and the laws are structured, we're building them. So for example, at under 10s there's a 3-man line out, and then on under 12s some more, and then under 16s they start jumping in the line out. So there's a progression in terms of what the players are doing in the game as they move up through minis and through the age grades. And then there's also a piece where, you know, the leadership piece. You know, we have forward leaders, we have back leaders, we have people need to communicate very strongly on the team to be successful. And then there's the camaraderie. So we, you know, after any game here, we'll always have something here in the clubhouse with food and tea and so on, and gives people a chance to socialise. And then we'll organise maybe to go to a Munster match down in Cork or in Tormont, etc. So I suppose there's a natural progression in how the players develop in their, you know, athleticism, if you like, and in their skill and in their knowledge of the game, also in the terms of their own communication and leadership within the game and as they move forward, and then also the camaraderie around that and around activities around rugby.
And Killian, I suppose from under 18s, do many people make that step to playing senior?
We've been working hard to try and improve it. With the last 10 years, we had a bit of a difficulty in retaining players, but that was pretty much nationwide. Every club was going through the same thing. But with the last 4 years, we've had a much better hit rate in keeping lads going and keeping lads progressing through to the seniors. Like, we're playing Waterford City here on Sunday, the senior team, and of the 22 players, we think it'll be 10 or 11 lads will be under the age of 22. So that's a huge plus for the club, and really it's a massive benefit for us looking at the future of the senior team, that when players are aging out, we're able to replace them and constantly have a stream of lads coming through from the underage who know the coaches, know the system, have a love for the club, and they build through into the seniors and hopefully can progress their skill levels and their abilities and bring the club up from Division 3 into where we kind of want to be.
And where does the club want to be?
We want to be at least in Division 1 once they're pushing towards the AAL, that at a minimum. And once we get to that level, which I hope will be in the next few years, we'll see about progressing from there. But that is the absolute aim of the coaching team, to see the seniors and the club as a whole for the men's side of it. The ladies' side, then, we want to produce a proper senior team with a stream of players coming through that as well, which again we'll be pushing in the next few years towards being an AAL.
Thanks very much for that, Aidan. And you can listen to the full segment in our podcast section on WLRFM.com. Stay with us, because after the break, we'll be discussing the local races at Tramore this week.
Now, big week on the racing front just gone, and another big week coming. And I'm delighted to say, joining me in studio to discuss it all is WLR's racing correspondent, Mark Phillips. Mark, a busy weekend just gone, and I suppose we'll touch upon the big draw for ourselves this week. 7 race national hunt cards in Tramore this Thursday, starting at 2:05.
Yeah, I suppose after the recent rain, Jordan, I'm sure the going is probably going to be yielding to soft at this stage.
Yeah.
Which will probably suit the National Hunt horses coming out back after their summer breaks as such. The summer horses now, well, I'd say they'll be finishing up shortly because the ground is going to go against them as such. So as you say, 7 races, 2:05, and a good mix of hurdle and chases.
Absolutely, yeah. The feature race looks to be the Pickardstown Handicap Chase and the Waterford Greenway Beginners Chase, and then, of course, the Copper Coast Ladies Pro-Am Flat Race to finish. A couple of maiden hurdles thrown in there as well. And, you know, hopefully the weather stands for it, as you say, because Tramore has been quite, I suppose, unlucky with the conditions in recent times.
It has indeed. I suppose it was good for August, which was the main thing this year. But it can, yeah, the way, and when it is wet and windy in Tramore, it's not the ideal place to be.
Absolutely. It's been busy because I suppose National Hunt season is good and proper, getting into full swing now, Mark. And then we just had, I suppose, the real climax of the flat season. They're just gone with the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe on Sunday. And that was a brilliant win for Ross O'Ryan, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Like he's really blossomed in the last couple of years, especially when he went to the UK.
Yeah.
And Rafe Beckett is an excellent trainer. His horses are in tremendous form at
Big
the moment.
Time.
And they actually paid 120,000 euros to supplement that horse last week. That was a big call. That was a big call. So obviously she came forward a lot in the last 2 or 3 weeks, this particular mare or filly as such. And but she was in great form yesterday, and Ross O'Ryan like had her well placed throughout, and won kind of shade comfortably in the finish.
Yeah, comfortable win for Blue Stocking. Of course, Aidan O'Brien had a couple in the race as well. Henry de Bromhead ran Term of Endearment in Group One on Saturday as well. So like, it's amazing to see the influence he's starting to have in the flat sphere.
Definitely, like when you see him going for a Group One, and she ran very very well.
She
was right in the firing line. She just couldn't quicken maybe in the last couple of hundred yards. And a couple of horses went by her. But look, it was our first. It's a big jump, even going from a Group 2 to a Group 1, especially at Longchamp. But she ran an excellent race, and it would be great if she could get her placed in a Group 1, because she'd be worth an absolute fortune when she's heading to the breeding paddocks.
Absolutely. Breeders' Cup maybe on the horizon too soon as well, so that to look forward to. And yeah, it's just been, I suppose, a very good week in the last few weeks for a lot of local riders. Like Henry de Bromhead's been in great form. John Gleeson's had a couple of winners. Point-to-point season is up and running now as well.
It is indeed. And that really begins when the winter comes. That's when the point-to-pointers come out. Big money involved in the point-to-points. If you can win your point-to-points now, especially as a four-year-old, you're guaranteed big money at the sales as such, because the English buyers are always looking for those three-mile chases as such. So yeah, it's a big... Especially in the Cork, Waterford area, a point of pinting is huge, and up in the north of Ireland as well. So keep an eye out for those over the next, I suppose, 5 or 6 months. It goes on until, I think, May or June and such. There'll be plenty of good racing on the pint of pint fields. A couple of meetings in Waterford. We have the normal one is held in Portlaw, and then you have the West Waterford is on in Lismore, and then you always have Dungarvan as well. So keep an eye out for those.
Absolutely. Couple of jockeys out with injuries at the moment as well. Obviously, we've seen Rachel Blackmore had that unfortunate fall where she hurt her neck. And then you mentioned to me Darrell Jacob and Jack Kennedy both back after lengthy absences at the weekend. And what happened in both their first races?
You couldn't write the script. I mean, you would imagine they'd be coming back on a safe conveyance in each race, you know. So Darrell Jacob rode a hot favourite. I think it was in Gorn there on Friday. And the horse more or less refused at the first hurdle and just threw Darrell over his neck. I presume Darrell was okay. I didn't see any reports to say that he wasn't afterwards. And of course, Jack Kennedy came back at Killarney yesterday and was a mile clear in a maiden hurdle, sure to win. A horse trained by Gordon Elliott for Jigginstown. So unfortunately, he tipped over at the last. Again, he got up, he walked away, which was fine. But it just goes to show you just can't, you just don't know what's ahead of you when you're riding a race over fences or over hurdles and on the flat for that matter as well.
Absolutely. It's definitely an occupational hazard. I know, I suppose we've always kind of made no secret of it. We probably prefer the National Hunt to the flat. So I think we're going to start seeing some good races soon. Like, it's not going to be long till we have the first Grade One of the season up and down Royal.
That's correct. And it was interesting, I saw there was great crowds attended the Listowel Racing Festival there not too long ago. I think something like 96,000 people over 4 days. That is absolutely huge. But it was very significant that the attendances on the days that National Hunt Racing took place far was a lot more than the people who attended on the flat cards down there. And that tells me one thing, that Munster down this end of the country is all National Hunt rather than flat.
Absolutely. Well, we'll wait to see how it goes for the course of the season, but a couple of exciting young horses to really look forward to in the next few months, I think, definitely on the local sphere. Mark Phillips, thanks a million.
Thanks very much, Jordan.
Now, to finish this week, a small bit of shameless self-promotion. Honoured and grateful to have won an IMRO National Radio Award on Friday night for my documentary Men's Health Matters here on WLR. So in celebration, I'm going to give it one last spin. Thanks a million to everyone for all the support, all the kind messages. Already really looking forward to what the next weeks and months ahead have to bring. Have a fantastic rest of the week. I'll talk to you next Monday.
Kids should be taught basic psychological tools of how to understand and be resilient with emotions and stress, which we're not taught.
My name is Jordan Norris and you're listening to Men's Health Matters. Every 21 hours, someone in Ireland commits suicide. 4 out of 5 are men. I want to talk about it. Over the past 6 weeks, I've spoken to experts, psychologists, doctors, and professors about mental health. But rather than speak about the subject, I wanted you to hear from people who themselves have experienced firsthand what it's like to struggle with a mental illness. This is Eamon.
Ireland is the fourth highest suicide rate in Europe for men aged 18 to 45. This is my story. This is that ice cold Michelle, fight for that white gold. I was 17, it was 2015. What a day it was, May the 3rd. Heading up to Thurles for the league final. Cans of Bulmers on the bus, tunes blaring. His laugh was louder than all of us. Waterford walloped Cork, 10 points to the good.
Ball is with Morris, he's gone inside the 20. Morris has a chance. Yes!
We were all on a high. Life couldn't get any better. He was my brother, my best friend. There were 3 years between us, but they used to call us the twins. Everywhere I went, he was there too, whether I wanted him to be or not. But the truth was, I always wanted him to be around. He was such a good laugh. He gave me a big hug at 3 o'clock that morning and I said I'd see you tomorrow. I went back to my friend's house and I remember lying in bed that night thinking, I can't wait to get up and try and convince him to go for a pint again. I knew he'd eat me out of it. He didn't eat me out of it. He said nothing to me. He didn't answer the phone when I rang him. There was nothing at all. Then I got the phone call to say he was missing. 2 hours later, we found him. He was gone. No explanation, no warning, nothing. We went from having a laugh together that day in Semple Stadium to shouldering his coffin 5 days later. My brother was clearly unwell, but he felt like he couldn't talk to anyone. He bottled it up and made sure everyone else was okay before himself. I'm appealing to any man who feels any way off to tell someone. It would be much better to swallow your pride than for your family to have to stand over your grave.
Suicide is the single largest killer of men under the age of 45. I'm Jack and this is my story.
Jack O'Donnell is 24 years old. He started struggling with mental health issues at the age of 14. 10 years later, one night still stands out in Jack's mind.
That summer in 2013, a good friend of mine, Tyne, was staying at my house. You know, usual crack, like probably up half night, like playing PlayStation or texting girls on Facebook or something. But this one night anyway, he was staying at my house and he was asleep on a mattress on the floor down beside me and I was in my bed. And I just remember waking up in the middle of the night. He was asleep, obviously, and I don't really know what woke me up like or whatever. And I just woke up, like I just felt this unbelievable wave of sadness come over me. Like I really couldn't describe it, but I still do remember to this day. And then all of a sudden, just ball and tears started just rolling down my face. Like it was just so crazy, like, and just honestly bawling my eyes out and trying to be as quiet as possible because I realized what was happening and I didn't want to wake up my friend. And there was a bit of panic in me then for a while. I was kind of thinking, well, geez, what's wrong with me? Like,
as time went on for Jack, he began to realize that this wasn't a one-off. Something wasn't right.
I wasn't comfortable in myself, bad anxiety, really down on myself. Confidence was a massive issue, definitely. Things were bad. I think I eventually then went to the doctor and, you know, he kind of was just like, oh, maybe go see someone or I could get you on medication. And I refused the medication at the time.
When Jack turned 18, he was at his lowest point. Still, he couldn't bring himself to tell his friends.
Like, I wasn't getting bullied. I wasn't being abused. You know, I had parents who would do it for me and they would do it for me. Looking back then, you're kind of friends with everyone, right? And I had one or two, like, really good friends that, real good, proper friends, like, that you know, you trust or whatever.
But even I didn't. What was going on?
No.
No.
I remember when everything kind of came out, probably my best friend, he's still one of my best friends now. Like, he was just disgusted. Like, he was just so shocked and so sickened that I didn't tell him. Like,
one day Jack made an incredibly brave call. He told the world what was wrong.
Because I was missing so much school and stuff too. I was a bit of a mysterious figure at that point, like, and you were kind of, I was kind of hearing rumours and things about myself, and I was like, oh Jesus, I'm just going to tell people what's up here now. Because there was times when I was in school and disappearing when I was there, like, and then I wasn't coming in for ages and things like that. So I was just like, right, we'll just put it out there altogether, like, it's just what happens happens, like, because I don't know, it might help someone along the way and it might help me too. So I said it's worth a go. It was worth a go doing it. And I remember, yeah, there was obviously like lots of people on to me and text me and all, and there's every so often I do actually scroll back through my messenger and read the messages and things like that, and you know, it's just mad thinking about how long ago that is now. Even like, it's, what is it now, like 5-6 years?
About 6 years,
and I go back and I look at those messages, like, and geez, some of them are just amazing, like. And then there was people then like texting me, even still do sometimes, like get the odd text off someone who might be struggling, like, or people that were struggling at the time, and they text me and they talked about themselves and they asked me questions and things like that, and you know, I'd obviously be very honest and I'd tell them what I feel and everything, and and like there was people that were surprising me, like there was people that I knew fairly well, there's people that I kind of knew or whatever. Jeez, I was really taken aback by the stuff people were telling me, you know, like. And it was nice, I suppose, in a way, because it was kind of a thing where
there's a strength in numbers in a way.
I definitely wasn't alone anyway in how I was feeling, and I know that now at this age, like, I think everyone's going to have some bit of a spell in their lives at some point. I'd say probably 99% of people will, like, it's just the way it is, unfortunately. Just the way we're wired, maybe, or just the way it's the same way you'll get a cold at some point in your life. I don't think you'll never meet anyone who hasn't had a cold or a flu. I think someone will get a dose of depression.
1 in 30 adults in Ireland suffer from problem gambling. I'm Adam, and this is my story. I was 13 the first time I had a bet. School lunchtime when I was in first year, I got one of the older lads to go in with the fiver I had for lunch. A horse called War of Attrition won the Gold Cup. I had 40 quid. The 40 quid didn't last long, but the rush never left. Before I knew it, I was making lunches for myself every night when my mother was gone to bed, and she'd give me money for food. I tortured the older lads to go in and do bets with me, to the point I got a reputation for it. When I was 16, I started getting served myself and had a part-time job at the weekends. Every penny I earned, I fed it to the bookies. One Saturday, I had 10 teams to win together and took home just shy of a grand. I wasn't even old enough to collect the slip, but I ended up using the money to buy a car. My poor father was at home, proud as punch at how hard I'd worked to save up for my first car. Little did he know, every cent I had was going one place only. I just happened to catch the odd lucky break. That car was one of the best and worst things ever, as it gave me unreal freedom, but too much freedom as well. Every time I left the house, I was driving in to back a dog or a match or just about anything at all. It's a trap, because when you get in there, you meet like-minded people. People that can't see that they've got a problem. There's no one to warn you how bad it can get. Once I went to college, that's when things really started to head that direction. I was getting the student grant every third Thursday, I think it was. And I'd go in and I'd put the 300 on the first horse running that I liked, or I'd put it on red or black. The first 3 months I did it, my luck was in. I had tons of money and I was the dog's bollocks above in Limerick, buying drinks, splashing ridiculous cash, the whole lot. But in my own head, even then I knew I was in deep. There was one stage where I had 16 grand in my account on a Tuesday, and by Friday I was in overdraft. I owed so many people money, because every time I'd had a bad run, I'd go chasing my losses. Gambling is a massive problem for young lads. It's everywhere you look, and the main thing now is you can go on your phone and blow your money without a second thought. I don't even have a good news story to say I've recovered and that things are better, because I'm still doing it. Just nowhere near as much as I used to, because I've learned my lesson to some extent. But it's a sickness that so many people have. There was a man I knew that I used to meet in the shop, where he went in on a Tuesday morning or Sunday evening, he'd be there. He took his own life and left behind a wife and 3 kids because he ended up owing so much. Fellas only ever tell you how much they won, never how much they lost. But the truth is, you've lost the minute you start in the first place.
Close to 60% of men don't regularly see a doctor unless they are seriously unwell. I'm Wayne, and this is my story.
When Wayne Power was in his early 20s, he had a panic attack on the streets of Dublin. Little did he know then that it would be one of the last times that he'd see the capital.
When I got home, I did the Irish thing of going down to the off-licence and like bought like a rake of cans and knocked back a rake of cans, thinking, right, this'll
fix me up.
This'll calm me down. Yeah. Tomorrow morning I'll be grand, blah, blah, blah. And it just accelerated from there. The next day I was starting a new job in a call centre, and I could feel the same thing happening. So much so that on the Thursday I actually got the train back down to Waterford.
All of a sudden, leaving the house had become almost impossible for Wayne.
Like, now and again I'd have my mum say to me, look, could you pop down to the shop and, you know, get milk or get whatever? And for like a complete hour, I'd have to kind of psych myself up.
Suddenly a big deal. Like,
just psych myself up to go down to where I'm living. It would have been Paddy Brown's Road. And that's like a road I would have grown up with. And I'm like, why am I so...
why can't I go down the road?
Going on here? And if this is what's going to happen every time I step outside the door, then do you know what? You can keep it. And
right.
There was kind of like an almost like an internal decision, like in my head, where I was like, do you know what? I think I might be staying put. So yeah, it was just kind of like a gradual descent into full blown agoraphobia, where I was housebound for 3 years from 2005, yeah, towards the tail end of 2005 up till the end of 2008.
And you didn't leave the house at all, is this?
No.
His fourth book is now on the shelves, and Wayne is slowly but surely making his mark on the world once more. This is his message.
Men's mental health, like, you know, whether it's an issue with suicide or depression or anxiety, I just think myself, like, I think you kind of start healing once you open your mouth.
There's a lot of ways for me to look at my mental health, and there's so many perspectives I can have, all of which I have by virtue of hindsight. But I suppose right now it's an unerring sense of gratitude that I'm in the position to be able to tell any story at all, be it big or small. The one assumption I always had in my life was that something had to happen for you to be depressed. There had to be a death or a breakup or something that would always prove to be a source of particular stress. Stuff that had been going on behind closed doors. But it just doesn't always turn out that way. For years, I'd always been hung up on what people thought of me, how I looked, how I was viewed, whether or not I was respected, whether the things I were into were socially admirable or not. And the reality that I learned, and often in a very sobering manner, is that you can never pretend to be something that you're not, because your true self will always find a way to stop that self in its tracks. People are living their lives as characters, and there's only so many people who can benefit by doing that. It serves no benefit to you. The amount of young men who are happy-go-lucky in their everyday lives, yet miserable when they go to bed and turn out the lights, it's nothing short of shocking. It's an epidemic in itself. Yet there's no societal acceptance of that fact, even though it's something that the vast majority of people are acutely aware of. And there's far too many people that are turning to bags of cocaine and the dopamine chase instead of actually turning to face the mirror and being man enough to confront the issues that are at heart. The suicide rate for men between the ages of 15 and 24 in Ireland is the fourth highest in Europe. It's really hard to find facts and figures on suicide, but the reality is the people that form those statistics, they're far more than statistics. And it's up to us as a society as a whole to prevent the people that we know and love from becoming part of the next wave of data. The resources just aren't there in Ireland. And I'm only one person, but I'd love to be able to do something to change that. And I think everybody that can should. Our generation, men in particular, think it's cool not to care. It's not. Effort is cool. Caring is cool. Loyalty is cool. And people should try it. I'm using my voice and my platform to try and make a difference. That's not saying I will, but I'm a person who will try. Control what you can control, because you can't control anything else, or else you'll just lose control of yourself trying to. I've been that person, and thankfully I've learned my lesson, but the epidemic that exists in Ireland is a war that a lot of men, they're not going to win it alone. I think if I want to do my best, great, and if one more person chooses to do the same on account of this, then it's been worth every single ounce of effort. To cover and shower above.